You see, most gamblers, when they go to gamble, they go to win. When we go to gamble, we go to lose. Even when we win, it's just a matter of time before we give it all back.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast,
featuring Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
Join them on their journey as they grow from gambling writers to sports betting sharps.
I mean, it's the gambling business. Occasionally get punched in the face.
You're listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast. Now, Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
We have a well-rounded Bet Slippin' Podcast in store for you, homies. Connected in our little digital studio with the homie Eston McLaren. Let me set the table a little bit before we get to handicapping. We're going to talk about the NBA Conference Semifinals round. We'll also talk about the NHL Stanley Cup Playoffs. And Eston and I have some MLB Future Awards predictions and possible best bets that we might go to the window with. Before we get to handicapping, though, of course, let me introduce or bring in the homie, handicapping hype man, my gambling consigliere, the sharper half of this podcast. The dude's on fire right now, cashing tickets, just getting mad guap, as the kids would say. I don't know if the kids still say that, but anyways, the homie, Eston McLaren. Eston, what's up, bro?
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Yeah, you're right. It's been a good couple weeks. NHL playoffs off to a great start. Decent week on the links last week, actually. Patrick Cantlay at the Memorial Tournament. No, I really got bailed out by fading John Rahm. Just a horrible decision on my part pre-tournament. And then, you know, Saturday night, pulled up the course, tested positive for COVID at the end of his third round with a 6-stroke lead. So see you later, John Rahm. Patrick Cantlay right back in the hunt, and then held on to beat Patrick or Colin Morikawa in the playoffs. So, yeah.
You know, I wish I was a little quicker on my feet. That way I could spin this positively and say something along the lines where you possibly knew that he was going to get a positive COVID test. I mean, it would appear it could be dumb lucky, but I feel like you really handicapped the shit out of that event. So
I would like to say that my research goes that deep into the PGA Tour's testing protocols, and I have an inside source there, but I don't. Gotta admit to a lucky break whenever they come along, and hey, there's no room at the window for a story, so you know, you just take it, and the winner's a winner.
Well, OMT's next week's episode, one of the episodes we're going to do next week, we're going to connect with managing editor of Golf Week, our homie Tim Schmidt. He's been on here a couple of times to cover the past two Masters, I believe. He gave the winner of the 2020 Masters. Awesome dude. Has a bunch of inside sources. He might be able to clue us in on a dudes who might get a positive COVID test. That's the guy. You should have just thrown him under the bus. Like, yeah, I got it from Tim. He got it from one of his sources.
Yeah.
He probably wouldn't like that, lying in his name. But he'll be here next week. We're really excited to talk about the U.S. Open. We're not going to cover this week's golf event. Where is it, though?
The Palmetto Championship at Congaree in South Carolina. We're through the first round here today. Dustin Johnson. Turned out he showed up and is trying this week in the first round lead. So I'm going to lose some money by the early looks of that, but hey, that's all right. We'll regroup with him next week and, you know, get some winners at the U.S. Open.
Yeah, and I know I tease this every episode, but be sure to check out all of our handicaps for all the major sporting events on sportsbookwire.usatoday.com. That's who and where we do the Bet Slippin' Podcast for. You covered this week's golf tournament earlier in the week, so I'm sure a lot of our listeners read some of your handicaps, picked up some of your picks and some of your takes here, and hopefully are trying to profit off it. Hopefully everyone could profit off of it, but I know you did a great job, and obviously that you know, your work cashed us a ticket last week with Patrick Cantlay. So awesome stuff. Good job on you, or good job by you in that. And again, just make sure to check out Eston's stuff and all of our writers' stuff on sportsbookwire.usatoday.com. But let's get to handicapping, right? Want to get
let's
into
do
this?
It. Yeah. Enough for the past.
Talking about the NBA Conference semifinals right now. I have a lot of money in the Nuggets to win the Western Conference and to win this series against the Suns. They dropped game two and just another double-digit blowout. Michael Malone, their head coach, said that they quit last night in game two. It was like 120 to they scored under 100 points. I'm pretty much tapped out on this series. I did take another piece at plus 320 yesterday before they started playing. I am a bit of a junkie. I could talk myself into taking the plus 500 on the conference or on the series price again with the Nuggets because as terrible as it looks, you really can't say much good about the Denver Nuggets. And, you know, the Suns had an amazing regular season and they held serve at home, right? You know, so they're still like we've seen the Clippers come back from down 0-2 when we actually we gave out a Clippers series spread, I think, bet a couple weeks ago against Dallas Mavericks. So it's not over, but you know, the long shot of Denver coming back is, you know, baked into the odds. Plus 500 to conference series price. Game three tips off in Denver Friday, June 11th. We're recording Thursday, June 10th. It's going to be 10 o'clock. Right now, the odds are on that one. The Nuggets are favored 1.5 to win game three. The over-under is 223.5 minus 110 each way. The money lines are Nuggets minus 120, Suns plus 100. Do you have any thoughts or bets on that series, on that game? What are you thinking?
No, I'm certainly not as bold or courageous as you and looking to, you know, triple down or quintuple down whatever you're at on the Nuggets here. You know, we talked last series with the Trailblazers and the backcourt advantage Portland had over Denver, was supposed to have over Denver. Turned out they didn't use it properly, or it didn't matter because of Nikola Jokic. Well, Phoenix is exploiting that mismatch now, and you know, Chris Paul, pretty safe to say he's recovered from that first round injury the way he looked in the last couple games, and Devin Booker as well. So yeah, I do not want to get any live action against Phoenix right now.
Now he's lighting Campazzo's ass up, let me tell you. And the under-discussed piece and building block of the Phoenix Suns moving forward is DeAndre Ayton. People like forgot because he's in the Luka and Trae Young draft. He was the first pick in that draft. And I mean, he played his ass off in the first series against the Lakers, even before Anthony Davis went out. I don't know what he's shooting in these playoffs, but I want to say it's over 65%. He's killing it. I mean, he's a legit 7-foot big man, close to 300 pounds, can hit outside shots, is a force in the middle, and if he can just do enough to neutralize Nikola Jokic, that's going to make the Suns a comfortable winner in this series. I can't see it getting past five if Jokic doesn't light his ass up in Denver. We'll see, but like DeAndre Ayton is kind of proven to be a worthy first pick even in that stacked draft, and you know, it's great because they know, you know, who the leader of their backcourt is moving forward. Devin Booker is probably a 25-point-per-game guy. DeAndre Ayton is the leader of their front court, hopeful defensive anchor, and either way can be just an absolute presence down low. And, you know, I'm going to eat my words, eat some crow on this if the Nuggets lose. I like this series for the Nuggets. There's even times for the first two games. I really like the pace of the game for the Nuggets. I think if it gets to an up-and-down pace that more or less favorites the Nuggets is the best way for them to win. They got to stop giving up Mikal Bridges' corner threes. I mean, he's just making them pay. And Cameron Payne is balling. Like, it's all going right for them. And I guess the best argument, and maybe this is a little too much glass half full, is that, like, role players play better at home. They're going to regress a little bit on the road. Nikola Jokic is going to step it up. The Denver Nuggets role players are going to step it up. And Denver has a legit home court advantage with the higher altitude. So we'll see. But they don't win game three. Like, you know, that's the last time we're talking about the Nuggets in the Bet Slipping podcast, unless I'm apologizing for my earlier future bets.
Yeah, the only thing to me would be Denver's not at full capacity yet, I don't think, right? At least the Colorado Avalanche aren't in this second round. The Avalanche go to full in the third round. I assume it's the same for the Nuggets. So that would be the only thing here, is that they don't have as great of a home court advantage as they could. Phoenix was the best home team all through the regular season. You know, they were still pretty good on the road, but yeah.
Probably
Nuggets game three, but I'm not going against the Suns in the series.
I'm with you. I'm not even going against the Suns in game three. I kind of just tapped out on this one. No, I think the home court advantage, a true home court advantage that Denver would have, would just be the higher altitude and that being like difficult to adjust to. I don't know. It's hard for me to factor in the actual like influence of the crowd, especially with these limited capacities. At what number does it become like, oh, this matters? From 9,000 to 10,000? I mean, come on, who knows? I don't know, and no one really knows, but higher altitude is like a legit thing that they have to battle. But we've spent far too much talking about a series that neither one of us have plays on. Hopefully we breeze through the next series. The Milwaukee Bucks are hosting the Brooklyn Nets tonight. Again, Thursdays when we're recording. They're going to play at 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. Right now the lines are the Bucks are favored 3.5, minus 105. So Nets are plus 3.5, minus 115. The over-unders, 234.5, 110 each way. The money lines are minus 155, plus 125, minus 155, excuse me, for the Bucks, plus 125 for the Nets. This one's another, well, this one will be a little shorter than the last series breakdown or recap, just because I don't have really any money on the series. I did write up that I like the Bucks at plus 1.5 series spread, but I wasn't able to access that because I don't have BetMGM in my state. Shout out to the 10 states that do. Check out our awesome sponsor, BetMGM, if you're in one of those 10 states. So I wasn't able to get as much action, or wasn't able to get action on the Bucks. I played them the first two games. We saw how that worked for me. I mean, the Nets have put the fear of God into me. The East is probably over. The only thing that we could say is they're a little small. Maybe Embiid, if they can get past the Bucks, just bullies them and creates havoc. I don't really believe that. I'm at the point now where, and we talked about this in the beginning of the season, I had Jason Tatum as my MVP, but I said Kevin Durant is the best player in the world. Kevin Durant running away is the best player in the world. There isn't a conversation really that I'm willing to entertain. You know, it's him, a Gulf, and then number two. Maybe Kawhi could make an argument. We'll see if they meet in the finals. But, I mean, Kevin Durant's balling. He's healthy. The only argument about him not winning the MVP was his health, and that's what happened. So I'm not touching this one. I mean, it feels like, you know, the line is just your standard Bucks back against the wall. They're the home team. They're an offensively explosive team. Denver Nuggets, it's bad defense, minus 3.5. I think you'd have to be insane to lay 3.5 tonight out of what we've seen from the Nets in the first two games. And, you know, I've went back and forth with numerous NBA betting homies and just talking about, you know, Buds needs to do better with his coaching adjustments. They need more out of Chris Middleton. They were down 50 at one point. Chris Middleton could have had the game of his life. They weren't winning game two. There's nothing they could have done.
I think they're a little bit beyond these minor adjustments. There's nothing that I've seen that would make me want to get any action on Milwaukee right now. The only thing you're doing is betting on a disaster for Brooklyn. So, not interested in that.
Right. You are literally, like, if you're betting Milwaukee, you're essentially betting the chance of Kevin Durant getting injured. That's your handicap, essentially. I don't know what you could have taken from the first two games to have any hope in Milwaukee. And, I mean, I love Giannis. You know, he's great. That's not, like, a hot take by any means. But if he can get up to 75% free throw shooting, he's going to be borderline unstoppable. Until that happens, he's going to have serious limitations that you can get another coach in, but unfortunately, you're only going to go as far as your top player can take you. They obviously need more out of Middleton, but the Nets right now are shooting 50, 40, 90 as a team. There is a handful of players that have ever done that in the history of the NBA and in the regular season. They're doing it as a team. I don't even know where you begin to poke holes in this squad. They're absolutely scary. I got a homie that's been investing, straight up investing and the Nets to win the conference in different ways, parlaying it with all these different things. This guy's got like 10,000 tied up in the Nets winning the Eastern Conference, and it's genius. It's like buying a – he's like, I'm essentially buying a stock with a very little chance of losing. I can't disagree. Can you disagree?
No. Really, obviously, hindsight here. But, yeah, just bet any big baseball favorite and parlay it with Nets to win the conference.
Yeah, let's get Scherzer tonight. Parlay with the Nets to win the conference. I'm with you. Next game, though, again, Thursday. This is also being played Thursday tonight, June 10th, 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Game 2 of the Clippers at the Utah Jazz. I don't have a specific play on this game. If I was forced to make a play either way, I would play the Clippers +3. I might talk myself into it based on market reports or, I don't know, just last second stuff that I consume, basketball logic or basketball takes that I consume prior to tip-off. But I am going to play the Clippers in the series. I mean, if you want to play the Clippers in the series, +3 is in a bad spot here. But then again, they dropped their first two games last series and then ended up winning in 7 against the Mavericks. Dude, LA's was first in three-point shooting this regular season, and I didn't know this. Do you know they set a record for the highest free throw shooting ever?
No, I definitely went under the radar.
They shot, I think it was 82.6, 83% from the free throw line as a team for the season. I mean, what do we know? As cliche and corny as this sounds, it's a make or miss league, right? If you have the best 3-point shooting team, and what else do we know about this league? A lot of foul shots, a lot of ways to manipulate the referees. If you have the best 3-point and free throw shooting team, that's a real good. Those are great steps in the right direction. You know, that's when you start handicapping.
I guess when you never let your bigs touch the ball, that's gonna inflate that number a little bit. So
I mean, even better, they don't even have bigs. And this is crazy. I'll look it up specifically. Actually, let me try to stall a little bit, but their regular starting big, who was played off the court in the first series, Zubac, he's going to be used a lot and relied upon a lot because he's a legit 7-footer. So they got to put someone up there with Gobert. He's shooting for his career, legit 7-footer, shooting 76% for his career. He shot 79% from the free throw line. So that's their bad free throw shooter. Like that, if he gets fouled, like kind of, that's cool. Like you know, if your Clippers want him shooting free throws. So, I mean, again, with all the ways that there are to manipulate the referees, you know, all these like random instant replay officiating calls, it's hard to not take the team with the better free throw and 3-point shooting. And I'm just, you know, I've always been down on, not down, but I've thought that the Utah Jazz's depth was overstated and wasn't going to matter a lot in the playoffs. We'll see. You know, they had two finalists for Sixth Man of the Year. I believe Clarkson won it. Ingles was the other finalist. But in the playoffs, Ingles is minus 14 points per 100 possessions. Clarkson's minus 20.1 points per 100 possessions, according to cleaningtheglass.com. So they're top heavy in the playoffs. They're going to rely on the stars. And the Clippers got two alphas. And, you know, everyone talked about Luka because his fabulous stat lines was just gorgeous, sexy step backs that he was hitting from like 30 feet, scratching the rooftop. But Kawhi Leonard outshot him. Kawhi Leonard played on both sides of the floor. Kawhi Leonard's the better player and played better in that series. I know most people aren't saying that. It's not the sexy take. But, you know, I think that I think the Clippers are going to be able to defend this team. You know, even though they're the Jazz are one of the best 3-point shooting teams behind the Clippers, they both play at a below average pace. At least they did in the regular season. They both force. They have a low defensive turnover rate, so there's going to be a lot of half court basketball. And I'm going to defer to the better half court basketball players, the team with the better half court basketball players on it, and that's going to be, you know, the Clippers with Kawhi and PG. And we're getting a chunky +180 for the Clippers to win the series. They're supposed to lose game one. It was a scheduling loss. I heard one guy say, and that's a term that I've used before, they played Sunday morning, turn around, played Tuesday night, short turnaround, seven-game series against a well-rested first-place team that's well-coached in a lower-altitude home court. They lost game one. They should have won. They lost by three. Kawhi Leonard had a no-show. I'm taking the plus 180. Spoiler, it's going to the window with me. I just ranted and rambled. Do you have anything?
No, you covered all the bases there. Plus 180 is excellent value. I'm surprised it's that high already after one loss, especially a loss that they could have tied it on the last shot, but despite a real strong play from Rudy Gobert. So, yeah, the Jazz are better rounded than the Mavericks, certainly, but you know, the Clippers are able to figure out a way to stop Luka Doncic and co. They're not going to get beaten by Donovan Mitchell in this series. I just can't see it. And yeah, as you said, Kawhi Leonard had, you know, pretty safe to say his worst game of the series, if not the entire playoffs. So I think the Clippers bounce back, and plus 180 is a great number.
Yeah, it feels like a similar move to like LeBron, just taking the first game, see how they're going to defend him. Royce O'Neal, who's a stretch four for the Jazz, who I really like, has been shooting his ass off from three. He did a great job defending Kawhi Leonard. I think Kawhi Leonard ends up lighting his ass up just because, you know, he's a better player, and that's how it works in the playoffs. But it's going to be a tough matchup. Obviously, the plus 180 kind of illustrates that, but I'm taking it. I'm going to go to the window with it. The other series, Eastern Conference semifinal series between the Philadelphia 76ers, Atlanta Hawks, goes to Atlanta Friday, June 11th, playing at 7:30. So tomorrow, if you're listening to this podcast today, which is Thursday, the 76ers, I believe they're favorite. Let me get over there to the BetMGM odds. All of our odds today are going to be provided by BetMGM, our sponsors. So once again, if you're in one of those 10 states, which I will not list, they could be in the promo in the beginning of this podcast, but check out all your available options. And if you have BetMGM, definitely check them out. But 76ers on BetMGM's books favored 1.5 in Atlanta tomorrow, 110 each way. The over-unders, 223.5, which came down, but the over is juiced to minus 115 under 105 money lines, minus 120 76ers, even money for the Hawks. Do you have a play on either side of the total or teams?
Yeah, definitely the over, I think, if that's coming down. Fine, playing into the juice there. And yeah, I think Philadelphia would be the side here. Minus 1.5, sure. You know, they only won one game at home. The Hawks technically stole home court advantage. I don't think that's really going to matter. You know, we saw a nice bounce back from Philly, and that's all they needed to do was to win one. So, yeah, I'm on the Sixers here.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I would really, because I should have taken the Sixers. I think they were minus 130 when they were down 0-1. I wouldn't hate if they lost tonight and I was able to get them again at close to a pick-em price, minus 120, minus 110. Even I'd play them with the minus like 135, if that's what their series price went to, down 2-1. I'm on the over too. Spoiler alert, this one's going to the window with me. The over is now 223.5, minus 115. I originally had it jotted down as 224.5, minus 110. So it's ticking down. I might wait, see if I can get an even 223 or even lower, but Philly's playing with the second highest pace in this postseason. Game two is trending over, but Philly pulled away early in the fourth quarter and it just suppressed the final total. Fourth quarter total was only 45 points. Game one went over by 32.5 points. I think game three is going to play at a similar pace with Philly coming out strong. Which is going to force Atlanta to play at a higher tempo than it's used to, but they're shooting well. The role players for Atlanta are shooting pretty well, and it's kind of being under-discussed because of Joel Embiid's dominance, which we'll talk about here in a second, but the Hawks have five players shooting above 50% from three, Lou Williams and Nello Gallinari, my boy Kevin Huerter, and John Collins are all shooting above 50%, and Bogdanovich is shooting 38% from three, so solid number for him. Trey just does need to knock down some more three-point shots. I think he's roughly around 25%, so not where they want him to be, but he's still playing good offense, still getting a lot of people involved in finding wide-open shooters, you know, hence the 50% from five different Hawks players. Again, Embiid's averaging 39.5 points per game through the first two games of the series, so Sixer spot-up shooters should continue to get wide open looks, and four of their five starters are shooting at least 54% from the field. Pretty impressive. Seth Curry has hit 10 of 15 threes. Dude is on fire. Shake Milton caught hot in game two. And, you know, you need two or three role players to step up and hit threes in any one given game for them to be close to unbeatable, because you can essentially pen in Joel Embiid's number. So if Steph Curry's hot, Danny Green, who's shot like shit, if he's hot, Tobias Harris, if any two of those three are hot, it's almost impossible to beat the 76ers. But I think they move the pace. I really like the role players, Atlanta, how they've been shooting. Again, going back to a similar theme, role players usually shoot better at home. So I like this game to go over 223. Oh, also, they both are first and second in free throw to field goal rate in the regular season. Atlanta could definitely benefit for some home cooking, some referee home cooking, and Embiid's just amazing, again, to the free throw line in general. So I'm with you, and it's good to be on the same side as a winner here on the Bet Slipping Podcast like you, Esten. So 223.5, let's do it, baby.
Yeah, into it.
All right.
Anything else?
Go ahead.
Anything else in NBA? Any Finals MVPs, or you're just locked into Durant?
Yeah, no. If Brooklyn wins, it'll probably be Durant who wins the MVP. Even though I can see just some stupid outcome where the defense like just overemphasizes the stars, and Joe Harris shoots like 70% from three for like a week. But I mean, it's probably gonna be KD. Maybe Kyrie. I mean, I don't know. It's stupid to talk about just how dominant they've been, especially in this series. They don't even have James Harden. Like, it's just whatever, dude. This is a bummer. As like an NBA fan, it's like, this is a bummer, dude. It really is. And as a New Yorker who was anti Nets, this sucks. But no, we've kind of not beaten a dead horse, but we've exhausted the NBA coverage here. We'll talk a little bit about it, or at least I'll bring some of these picks to go into the window with me. But let's move over to the rink where we get the Stanley Cup playoffs. Three of the four Stanley Cup second-round playoff series are wrapped up with the puck drop for Game 6 of the Avalanche and Golden Knights. Tonight, Esten cashed Montreal Canadiens over a Winnipeg series, Jets series ticket. I know you, similarly to my homie with the Brooklyn Nets, have been investing in Tampa Bay Lightning futures. That's looking good. They're just rolling through teams, looking like they could repeat, but we don't want to get too far in front of our skis. What are some of the, I guess, takes, handicaps, or tidbits you've pulled so far through the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Yeah, I'm certainly not in quite as deep as your buddy with the Nets, but yeah, the Lightning, you know, they stay at a good value. The Stanley Cup, they're down from plus 700-ish pre-playoffs. They're now the favorites. That's because Colorado and Vegas are just knocking each other up here. Game 6 tonight, and then, yeah, I got to go with Vegas Thursday night here. Is Vegas up 3-2.
Is that the best series of the playoffs so far?
Yeah, and probably one of the best in quite a while. You know, these teams, the top two teams from the regular season, they're meeting in the second round of the playoffs here. We rarely get that. We're only getting it this year because of the strange structure of the NHL this year. And yeah, you know, they've lived up to the hype, especially when you contrast that series against that Winnipeg-Montreal series in particular. How awful that one was, and then these guys would come on a couple hours later and just be amazing. But yeah, Vegas lost game one 7-1. That's because Robin Leonard drew the start and just absolutely was awful, and nobody really showed up in front of him. I don't know if one has to do with the other directly, but you know, that wasn't the same team they were in the regular season, and certainly not the same team they've been in the last four games. They've been the absolute better team ever since game one. You know, they kind of snuck one out in game five, actually, but whatever, they got it. They're up 3-2, back on home ice, and this is a full crowd in Vegas. That's been a big thing ever since the Golden Knights came into the league. And we've seen it in these playoffs, and you know, they weren't that great on home ice against the Minnesota Wild in round one. Actually, they weren't at full capacity yet. It's upped for round two here, and it's been a difference. You know, Robin Leonard, Philip Grubauer, both Vezina Trophy finalists. Marc-Andre Fleury is the veteran, though. He's been here before, and he's been better in Vegas. You know, better defensively, and getting big goals from guys like Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone that they need to score. And I'm on Vegas. I was already on Vegas to win this series. The only play I would make would maybe be a small series play on Colorado right now rather than the game six line. You can get a little bit better value on the series line, because if they win tonight and go back home, I like them in a game seven, I guess. But I think Vegas wins it. And then onto the third round, one series set, New York, Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay, you know, they're home in this one after being on the road in both of the first two series. You know, they're at home against the Lightning here. Minus 190 for game one. Not very interested in that. I'd probably take the -1.5, win by two or more goals. On the series line, they are, minus 250. So even that, nothing. I'm just going to ride out my Stanley Cup future with the Lightning. When that other series gets set, whether it is Vegas or Colorado, absolutely hammer that side harder than you've ever hammered anything against the Montreal Canadiens. Carey Price may steal them a game somehow. That would be it. That's not going any more than five games.
Okay, does it get to a price point in which you wouldn't bet it, or are you looking at series spread lines? Are you talking about just hitting it every game? Because you're not going to play. You wouldn't play the Avalanche or Avs up to minus 300, or would you?
On the series line, that would be a net situation, I guess, where I'm just putting that into any other bet I'm making on a day-to-day basis.
Them and DeGrom, huh?
Yeah, sure. I'm not going to go that hard on a minus 300, but like say a -2.5 series line, sure. Like I said, Montreal's not winning more than a game against either of those teams, so -2.5 at whatever number that would be my best bet for Montreal versus Vegas or Colorado.
And there's nothing to this being like a Donnybrook, the Avs Golden Knights series, and then beating each other up and getting, you know, Montreal catching them like at the right time.
No, because they're both healthy. Colorado gets Nazem Kadri back for a game seven. If there is a game seven, you know, that he's their second line center, very good defensive player as well. So that's a big reinforcement. Both teams are pretty much full health. Montreal is as well. They've had this big rest, but hey, we saw Winnipeg had a big rest from round one to round two, and then they got swept by Montreal. So I'm not really putting much stock in that. And then when you mix in the travel for the first time all season, you know, both of those in the West Division and the North Division, those are already the two divisions traveling the most to begin with. So I'm not going to be too concerned about a trip from Montreal to Colorado or Vegas. Montreal just doesn't have the offense or the defense, or their only chance would be Carey Price stealing it as a former MVP. But both Marc-Andre Fleury and Philip Grubauer up for the Vezina this year. So if there's three of these four teams remaining in the playoffs can match Montreal, in the goaltending aspect, and that's the only advantage Montreal had against both the Maple Leafs and the Jets. So, yeah, zero interest in Montreal anymore. I won my round two bet. Thank you. Moving on.
Yeah, and from my perspective and from the Bet Slipping Podcast listeners' perspective, you're killing it, the Stanley Cup playoffs. So good job by you. Hopefully you keep the good stuff, the good momentum rolling. And if you're looking for any game-to-game handicaps or predictions, again, be sure to check out sportsbookwire.usatoday.com. We're covering every game in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So whether it be Esten or someone else, hopefully you get an Esten or you're following Esten's picks because he's just killing it. But be sure to check out all of our Stanley Cup coverage on our website, sportsbookwire.usatoday.com. Do you have any other notes here for the Stanley Cup playoffs, or do you want to move over to our MLB best bets, future best bets?
The only other future I would make right now, like I said, we said I'm locked into the Lightning to win the Stanley Cup. I would maybe place a little something-something on Marc-Andre Fleury to win the Conn Smythe as playoff MVP, because if Vegas wins this series, gets past Montreal, and then faces Tampa Bay in the Stanley Cup, he's their real only chance of Vegas winning the Cup. So, yeah, that's the only future hedge I'm making against Tampa Bay.
Okay, so the Conn Smythe is Stanley Cup playoffs. It's not the finals?
It's the full playoffs.
Yeah. Gotcha, okay. And I knew that. And do you remember a time a player on a losing team has ever won?
Yeah, John Sebastian Jaguar with the Anaheim Ducks.
Yes, Jiggy.
The early 2000s. Ducks lost to the Devils.
Oh, okay. I was going to say Red Wings, but no, you're right. Okay.
I think in seven games, but like he was the reason the Ducks got that far. And yeah, it was, I think that's, I don't want to walk it in, but I think that's the only time it's ever happened where a losing player has won it.
But there is a path to victory where you can cash both tickets. Obviously it's very much reduced if you have a very little chance, but open, like a sliver of doorway you can walk through, right?
Yeah, I don't want to brag about it just because Vegas is a much better team than that Ducks team was. And, you know, if they're the second best team, they deserve to be the second best team. It wasn't an otherworldly performance by Fleury that gets them there. And then there's just so many options on Tampa Bay to win it as well. Nikita Kucherov has come back and had an amazing playoff. Steven Stamkos has had a great playoffs. And Andre Vasilevsky, another Vezina Trophy finalist, he has had an excellent playoffs. He's had shutouts in both clinching games in the playoffs thus far. And, you know, yeah, I don't want to flaunt the Fleury pick in conjunction. I'm just saying that's my only hedge against Tampa Bay.
Gotcha. All right, good stuff. We'll pick this back up next week. Let's move over to the Diamond, though, where I have a best bet for the NL MVP. And how many? You have a few best bets or a few things you're leaning towards?
I have a couple here. Yeah, I'll see what you're saying.
Well, no, we can start off with one of yours if you want. I got a lengthy one, dude. You want to listen to my shit? You want to listen to my spiel first?
Yeah.
All right, cool. I got Jacob deGrom to win the NL MVP at plus 700. I watched a little bit of him this year, but I watched his most recent outing or start against the San Diego Padres. Have you watched a lot of Jacob deGrom this year?
Not enough, but I mean, how much do you need to see, right?
Sure.
You see him once, you've seen them all.
All right, fair enough. We talked about it in the in our National League preview episode months ago on the Bet Slipping Podcast here. And I think everyone, me, you, and the guest were all on board. Brian Rudd, we're all on board him probably winning the NL Cy Young. There's really not even a worthy contender. And that's still the case this year. This this dude is turning into an absolute folk hero. He started his May 31st start with 10 straight 100-mile-per-hour fastballs against the Arizona Diamondbacks. 10 straight. In an era where people are throwing their fastball less and less, this dude is coming in here humming it. Like, here it is, 100. Boom. And right out the gate, He's got three pitches. It's a fastball, a changeup, and an off-the-shelf slider. Like, it's just nasty stuff. There's not... this isn't Greg Maddux stuff. This isn't. He's not dancing around pitchers. Hitters. He's mowing them down. And I was watching his most recent start against the Padres this past weekend, and he was up at the plate, and I saw, and I did a quick like look and looked down, and I thought about it. I saw he was hitting 420 was his batting average, and I didn't even think about it. Initially, then after like a few seconds, like, well, wait a second, did I read that right? Is it 420 against this pitcher, or 420 in Petco Park, 420 in the month of, well, it was June. I didn't know what it meant, so I looked it up. He actually ended up grounding into a fielder's choice. He legged out the ground ball to prevent a double play as a pitcher. He legged it out. This dude was moving down the first baseline. I was like, oh shit. So I was like, all right, let me look at these batting numbers. He's hitting 391. He's hitting 391 for the season with an 826 OPS. His 135 weighted runs created plus are ahead of Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor, Jeff McNeil, Michael Conforto, and Dominic Smith. That's literally the 1-5 hitters in the Mets order. He's got a higher weighted runs created plus. His 0.4 WAR, hitting WAR, is higher than Jeff McNeil, Michael Conforto, and Kevin Pillar. Granted, it's an accumulation stat. He has less plate appearances than all three of those guys, two of which are injured. I mean, it's a similar logic to Ohtani, where if this guy's flirting with 300, if he's hitting 250, there's no conversation to be had. He is the best baseball player in the National League. Another point to his MVP case would be if he beats or finished below Bob Gibson's 1968 1.12 ERA mark. Only two pitchers in the history of baseball have finished below one ERA. It was Tim Keefe. You ever heard of him? 1880, the great Tim Keefe. Yeah, no, me neither. And then there was Dutch Leonard, another guy I never heard of, in 1914. Both of the only guys to pitch under one. He right now, I think he's at 0.42. I don't have his exact ERA, which is one of the few numbers I don't have actually listed. I just have his ranking in that one. He's comfortably below one. So obviously the biggest caveats or concerns, one of the biggest concerns of his MVP case is health, right? If he misses a few starts or misses any extended period of time, that's enough to eliminate a pitcher from winning the MVP, which is pretty rare. And most of you guys listening at home are like, yeah, I mean, how often does a pitcher win the MVP? Not very often, but it's happened with two active pitchers, actually. Kershaw's won it in 2014, and Verlander won the AL MVP in 2011. DeGrom has a better ERA, WHIP, xFIP, strikeouts per nine innings, strikeouts minus walk rate, and swinging strike rate than both of those guys. He has a 41.5% strikeout minus walk rate. Verlander in his MVP season had a 10.5% strikeout minus walk rate. Kershaw in his MVP season had 27.8 strikeout per walk rate. That is quite literally in a different league. As in, let's round up here. The difference between DeGrom right now and Kershaw's MVP season is 13.7%. Let's just round up to 14%. If you have a hitter that's hitting 300 and then the next guy's hitting 160, he's literally optioned. He's going down to the minor leagues. That is a different league of pitcher. These are two active MVP award winning pitchers that he is just heads and shoulders above. Heads and shoulders. It's not even close. You want to talk about his pitching ranks right now? He's first in WAR out of starting pitchers. He's actually first in the major leagues in all positions in WAR. He's first in ERA, first in xFIP, first in WHIP, first in velocity. His average pitch speed is 99.1 miles per hour. He's first in strikeouts per nine innings, first in swinging strike rate, first in contact rate, first in walk and strikeout range, first in walk minus strikeout range rate. Excuse me, tripping over my words here because I'm just so blown away by these numbers. I've literally never. I can say this comfortably as someone who's actually been paying attention and watching baseball his whole life. There's never been a more dominant pitcher through June in my lifetime. Like, I thought Pedro Martinez in 99, 2000, Randy Johnson 2000, 2001 was the best pitcher I've ever seen. This guy is head and shoulders above him. The only guys with better odds in the NL right now than Jacob DeGrom is Ronald Acuna and Fernando Tatis Jr., both tied at plus 300 to win the NL MVP, according to BetMGM. DeGrom has a better WAR than both of them, of course. And if the Nets win the NL East, they're currently ahead, and DeGrom is unquestionably the Cy Young. Doesn't that effectively DQ Acuna, unless he puts up 350, 50 home runs, something like that? Tatis isn't hitting for average. I think he has one of the best averages in the Padres, but it's still below 300. And again, I'm willing to take literally a generational lifetime pitcher at 7-1 over these guys at plus 3-1. Do you have any pushback or any thoughts on this?
Hey, you don't know. Obviously no pushback here, but all those stats you mentioned, here's one more for you. ERA plus, all right? So 100 is considered average. 75 is considered quite bad. 125 is considered very good. Jacob DeGrom's at 626.
It's six times the average. Again, this is like, he's like drinking Michael Jordan's special secret stuff. Like, he's like, it's like alien. Like, it's unfathomable, his numbers. That was beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful summation of what everything I just said. So let's go to your futures. Do you take an NL MVP somewhere else or another NL MVP?
No, I had a couple NL MVP long shots, but as you just went over, there's no point. And like we touched on with the Nets, kind of the only reason to bet on anyone else would be counting on a Jacob DeGrom injury. And hey, that's not what you should be doing in these markets. So over to the NL or the AL. Shohei Ohtani, the favorite at plus 120. Everyone knows the dual position threat. He's having career best seasons on the mound and at the plate. At the plate, actually, he's leading the American League in exit velocity, very close to the top, if not leading in hard hit percentage and barrel percentage. This guy just absolutely crushing baseballs this year. Mike Trout out of the lineup right now, that's helping his odds, or I guess public perception. The Angels still kind of stink. They're not out of it in the AL West. Maybe Trout comes back and they make a charge. Then, yeah, I wouldn't mind betting Ohtani. But right now, and more so than the DeGrom, you have to worry about injuries with him. So here's where I'm a little more willing to bet around it. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. plus 230 is second by the odds. He's in and out of the league lead in home runs kind of day by day. Him and Ronald Acuna keep switching back and forth. Well, he's kept the Jays afloat and looking respectable to good with star offseason addition George Springer playing just four games thus far, close to coming back now. So maybe that'll eat into Guerrero's attention a little bit, but you know, he's right up there with Ohtani in all of these hard hit metrics. Going a little bit deeper in the AL, which to me is the league with more long shot appeal. As you say, the NL is, you know, kind of DeGrom or maybe Acuna or Buss. So, yeah, sticking to the AL here with a third pick, I guess we can call it. Yoan Moncada of the Chicago White Sox has higher odds than reigning AL MVP Jose Abreu, basically only because Jose Abreu is the reigning MVP, I guess, because Moncada is leading Abreu in everything but home runs, I think, on the team. And Yoan Moncada also the highest defensive value of any American League player. I like him. What is he by the odds here? 1 second, unless you have it.
You said Moncada. I can pull it up. I'm right there. One of us will get there first. American League MVP. I have it at...
He is plus 7,000. Won that race. Abreu is plus 4,000. And yeah, like I said, that seems to be based off of winning last year's award. Moncada, more valuable by pretty much any metric you want to look at this year. And Chicago White Sox, if you can call an early division winner in the American League right now, the White Sox would be that pick in the Central. They have the best odds of any American League team of winning the pennant and of winning the World Series. So, White Sox are going to be the first team a lot of voters look to for AL MVP. And Moncada, especially when you incorporate defense at plus 7,000, if you're going to bet a long shot, we're a third of the way into the season. So most long shots are quickly losing their value. I think Moncada is absolutely the best value in either league or for any award in baseball right now.
Yeah, you actually just said something that kind of made me think. An outside, almost like sleeper candidate for American League Cy Young, I think would be Lance Lynn, plus 900. I'm not going to go to the window with it. It's just something that I thought of when you were talking about the Chicago White Sox. But, he continues to just be pitching his best, having his best of his career, and he's looked great. There's been there's really no regression metrics or really takes or angles to make on Lance Lynn. He's looked great, but no, I hear you on Mikado, and it feels like there's going to be at least one, if not two, awards given to the Chicago White Sox should they continue their AL Central dominant. And as much as people don't really like to hear this, but Tony La Russa could definitely be an award winner. But they're, as it stands right now, they should be getting some hardware at the end of the season. So we'll see. Do you have any other baseball picks, or are you ready to go to the window?
Yeah, let's go to the window.
The Bet Slippin' Podcast. Going to the window.
All right. And as you guys know, this is where we just wrap up the Bet Slippin' Podcast with our best bets, stuff that we're willing to give you listeners and stake our reputations and our names on. My slip here as we go to the window, I have three picks, going with Jacob DeGrom to win the NL MVP at plus 700 because he's essentially a folk hero. He's just throwing absolute gas, and if he hits over 300, I don't even know what the conversation is. I also like the over 223.5 at minus 115, the Sixers-Hawks game, which is being played Friday at 7:30, June 11th. And I also like the Clippers at plus 180 to win the series over the first place, Western Conference first place, Utah Jazz. That's what I got going on my bet slip this week. What do you got, Austin?
Yeah, I'm going to follow you on Jacob DeGrom for the NL MVP. You did a very good job of convincing me and hopefully all the listeners out there. And AL MVP, I really like Moncada at plus 7,000. I think that's a ridiculous number. Trey Mancini of the Baltimore Orioles, who absolutely suck, is plus 5,000. Get out of here. Nelson Cruz is plus 5,000. He just missed a bunch of time. And the Minnesota Twins are trash. Jose Altuve is here somehow. He's been bad. And trust me when I tell you that no voter is voting for a Houston Astro this year for obvious reasons. Yoan Moncada plus 7,000. Ridiculous number. And then back to the NHL. Go Vegas game 6 if you're listening to this in time. Then go Tampa Bay Lightning against the New York Islanders, even at a chalky round 3 series price. And then take Avalanche or Golden Knights at any bet you can find against the Montreal Canadiens, because I'm calling it that series is over.
All right, good stuff. It's been an excellent episode. Hopefully you guys can profit off of some of our picks. Or you just enjoy the conversation. If you do, please leave us a solid review on Apple Podcasts, the Bet Slippin' Podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review. Also, be sure to check out our written handicaps for all major sporting events at sportsbookwire.com. Thanks for streaming the Bet Slippin' Podcast. For Jeff and Esten, peace.
You You've been listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast with Jeff Clark and Esten McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire. Listen and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.